This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees. Hello, good evening, and welcome. It is the 14th of January, 2025. And tonight, we've got a program that'll take you from my hometown of Newcastle through to Mozambique, the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, and we'll find out why Beijing wants Elon Musk to own TikTok. But let's kick off with our top story. We are going to have the top story premiering tonight at 8 o'clock on the BizNews channel on YouTube. And here's a taster for you. An interview I had earlier today with Rob Herzog and Gerard Papenfuss. Gerard is the head of the National Employers Association of South Africa. Rob is a capitalist activist, and they were applying their minds to the disaster that is the closure of the steel plant in Newcastle, one of the two long steel plants in South Africa. The other one at Vereeniging is also going to be closed down. Who's to blame? Where are the seeds of this destruction, which is really going to hit the town very hard? Let's have a look. This week, it's rather personal for me. It's the potential destruction of my hometown. It's the town of Newcastle, which is going to have its steel plant closed down. Final decision came through last week. Rob, from an economic perspective, and I'm sure you and Gerard are on exactly the same page here, when there are subsidies, eventually they catch up with you.
So ArcelorMittal in South Africa has been the primary steel producer, and they're closing down their longs plant. Long means long steel. And it's a disaster, and it's a disgraceful situation, and the government needs to take the blame. It's terribly hard doing business in this country in any case. And to have an international, a reputable international company like ArcelorMittal pull out of this incredible business is a disaster for South Africa, a disgraceful situation for the government. And when you look at South Africa from an international point of view, who in their right mind would invest here? We're deindustrializing. I think we've gone from, get this statistic wrong, but 20% of GDP down to 10% of the manufacturing industry. We're soon going to be an agricultural, mining at best, and services country, and unemployment will be 90%. And the ANC has to take full responsibility for this disaster. And Parks Tower should be tarred, feathered, and thrown out of the government. But you know what happens to ANC members. They never do get thrown out. They just could move to another job. Unless we do a full clean out at the top, this country is finished. We're deindustrializing, falling apart, and losing ArcelorMittal is a disaster. That's the macro side of it.
Gerard, from your perspective, you agree to a degree, certainly the stuff that you've written for what Rob says, but I think you would disagree on the loss of the long steels. And just for those people who don't understand, there are two types of steel that is produced by ArcelorMittal in South Africa. Is what's called longs, which is what it suggests, railway lines, things like that. And then there's flats. And flats is what it suggests as well, steel plates. Now, there are two longs factories in South Africa, one in Vereeniging, the other one in Newcastle. Newcastle's by far the biggest. They are going to be closed down. The flats, which is in Vanderbijl Park, will be continuing. So just so that people understand a little bit of the technicals. But help us through, you write in there, a lot of your members are on the steel chain. How are you seeing this development?
I'm going to give you a bit of history, very short. 2015, there was a 5% duty on the importation of steel, 5%. Rob Davis then said, that had to go because he said we need a developmental price on steel. But immediately after that, Lakshmi Mittal from the international company, AMSA International, came to South Africa. They had a meeting with Jacob Zuma. And they immediately after thereafter introduced a 10%. So government then realized and recognized for a steel industry to prosper, you need good quality, cheap, not cheap, affordable steel. But that set in motion a thing that would have eventually killed this thing, AMSA. I mean, that moment, they started to put AMSA on life support. Now, the moment you put a person on life support, the end is near. Because you'll have to introduce it, more medicine, more oxygen. So where did we end up? In long steel, in beginning of December, they introduced another, on top of 9% duties, at that point, another 52% duties. Now, can you imagine a person that's ordered steel from China? He paid 10 million rand for it. By the time he gets to the port through customs, he pays another 50% on duty on that. That's another 5 million. When he gets to his factory, he put a 50% on the price. So the guy that's ordered to build a stock will say, no, I can't do it. You just increased the price by 50%. That's killing the market. Newcastle will be losing perhaps not to 3,500, maybe let's say 2,500. We don't know how many jobs. But, you know, when it happens to one town, it's a big story. When it's happening daily at a company employing 10, 20, 30, 40 people, that's not a story. When a company retrench 5 people, 10 people, 20 people, 33, and when a company that's 10 years ago employed 150, now employ 50 people, that's not news because it didn't happen overnight. And when it happens in Brits, that's not news. Who cares? So the industry is losing this portion of AMSA, but we've lost tens of thousands of employees throughout. And that never reached the news because we don't have the spin and the capacity to get out there and to put the spin on everything. AMSA has got an entire communication team dealing with this. But this has been killing the industry. It set in motion a slow decline. Now, that's not only steel. I mean, we're talking about collective bargaining and all these things, that crazy wages. The fact is, this is a very unfriendly market, and we're talking steel now. And I agree with Rob 100%. We see what is happening, and the ANC, these socialists, just do not understand it because I don't think they know where money comes from. They will explain it, print it, or made it the mint, you know. No, but really, do you know where money comes from? No, they don't, because they never made it. They get it through taxes. And the country is economically in slow decline. So what is happening with long steel? Well, what is South Africa saying? And this is what we say. If you cannot compete, well, don't be here. Sorry, we'd love to manufacture, but if we want to be a manufacturing country, then we'll have to get rid of red tape. We'll have to stop telling business how to conduct your business, who to employ, who partners do you have to take in. It goes against the spirit of an entrepreneur.
Well, there's some capitalist activists there giving their opinion. Hopefully I've given a bit of balance to it when you watch the full interview, but they're on fire, both Gerard Papenfuss and Rob Hershoff. Well, moving to Mozambique now, and my colleague Chris Steyn spoke to Tertius Jacobs to get an understanding of how bad the unrest is on the border to the north. What's it? Northeast, South Africa's northeast border. It's a long strip of a country, lots of people, one of the poorest countries in the world, but it has appeared to be moving in the right direction. The reaction to the recent election, however, has brought all kinds of problems to that country, and the unrest is threatening to get out of control. Let's join Chris.
Is there an estimate of the damage caused?
So this is in the billions, the economic, and also there are multiple levels to this. So you have your, let's say, domestic level, And here already the local economic sector have reported billions of meticals lost due to the disrupted road network, especially the between the Komati port or Lebombo border and the Maputo port. And then elsewhere, we've seen unrest in Pemba, in Akala to some extent, and then very prominently in Mbane province, which is essentially the tourist hub for Mozambique. We've seen massive disruptions there, and the tourist sector is really battling with this unrest. And the timing of it is also very bad. So aside from the disrupted logistics, they do have a dependency on tourism in certain provinces, and the timing of it within this festive period has had a massive effect on the tourist sector in the country. And this is the time they make the bulk of their money. But that's extremely detrimental. And in addition to that, the regional implications, South Africa uses the N4, which goes through Mozambique to the Maputo port, quite extensively for exports from northern South Africa. And here too, we are speaking about daily millions of rands being lost because of the disrupted logistics. So we've seen with this phase process, every time there's a bit of a lull, a bit of a break, the border will open and they will try to use this time to, as quickly as possible, get as much done. But the issue is still there, and as long as this issue of instability persists, it compounds, and we may speak of millions or billions of rands or meticals now, but it can inflate to a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. So the economic impact has been devastating.
Yes, definitely. And on a micro level, you will see some protests engaging in looting. And this too has had a massive impact on your smaller business, your small to medium businesses. They too are facing a big impact on that. And again, on the medium to longer term, there's questions about how it will affect the lower and middle class of Mozambique. We've had people in country telling us that the grocery stores are empty. And there's come a massive issue for your lower and middle class people to get food. There again, quite interestingly, your lower class are more dependent on the informal markets, farming, subsistence farming, and then fishing and so on. According to what we know, these may not be as heavily affected because of the more day-to-day nature. And they do not rely on a grocery store. They have markets, and whenever these small markets resume, there is food available for them, and they're sort of used to this lifestyle. So we anticipate that implication to be a bit lower. But then again, on the medium to longer term, for them, the disruption of the economy and the longer term effect will mean higher transport costs, for example, which will make their lives again more difficult. So I think from the micro level, all the way up to the very macro level, things are just devastating.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, nice to be back with you after that pretty grotty story about Mozambique. But I'll be going on Monday flying on Sunday, but attending from Monday the World Economic Forum, 19th time that I'll be having the privilege of seeing and listening to these incredibly smart people, not setting the agenda, but explaining what the global economic agenda is. And this afternoon, I spent half an hour listening to the president and the chief and the managing director of the World Economic Forum giving us a little insight into what we can look forward to over the next week. And indeed, Bronwyn will be in the chair here in South Africa, and I'll be bringing through a report discussing things with her. There are about 3,000 participants from 130 countries who gather at the World Economic Forum in Davos. 350 of these are leaders in government, primarily heads of state, but also cabinet ministers. And there are about 1,600 business people. So you add that together, there are 1,000 others, which would be media media representatives, media leaders, and people from civic society, academics, and so on. And this year, amongst the star attractions is David Beckham, the footballer who's going to be given the Crystal Award. In the South African delegation, it'll be led by Cyril Ramaphosa, but interestingly, for the first time, it won't just be ANC members. The Government of National Unity is well represented there with John Steenhuisen, Dion George, and Solly Matlatsi, joining people like Ronald Lamola, Parks Tau, Enoch Godandwana, and a few of the other cabinet ministers. But the big attraction of all of Davos this year is Donald Trump, and he is indeed going to be making an appearance. Even though he gets inaugurated when the WEF starts on Monday, he won't be in person, but he's certainly going to be there, and he's sending a lot of people over. That's what the WEF told us today. But let's go into this short little preview.
We are very pleased that President Trump will join us, as I said, in his first week as president, live in Davos and in dialogue with CEOs also. We have been told that the administration wants a broad footprint towards the end of our meeting. I'm then talking about Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. As we know, the inauguration happens on Monday, the 20th, and the Senate will probably start the process of then also clearing new secretaries, confirming new secretaries Monday afternoon. So towards the end, we do expect additional high level of representation from the Trump administration. So we're very pleased by that, because we know that there is a lot of interest, of course, among our participants, also the rest of the world, to decipher and understand the policies of the new administration. So it will be a very interesting week.
What about Elon Musk? Have you heard about him? Any chance he may be there?
Elon Musk, we don't know. He is, of course, also welcome with Donald Trump when he hopefully comes physically also at our next annual meeting.
The overall theme and the program of the annual meeting, Collaboration for the Intelligent Age, it is linked first and foremost to this deep sense of being on the cusp of a new era for the world economy, or at least in transition to a new situation. The AI and Gen AI obviously is front and center of our agenda. It is this super technology, if you will, that interacts with a lot of the other technologies. But we are making a point that really with the notion of the intelligent age, this is a broader spectrum. And so you will see us in the program addressing, of course, AI, Gen AI, but also biotech, clean tech, health tech, space tech, sensing technologies, robotics, advanced manufacturing, advanced energy technologies, and I could go on.
Yeah. So as you can hear from that, there's a lot of future stuff there. And I keep reminding the members of the BizNews tribe that 2 years ago, when I attended the World Economic Forum, I met Alex Karp from Palantir, and was so impressed that I put the stock into the portfolio. Also got exposed to artificial intelligence long before I would otherwise have been. And the idea was you learn there and you bring it back to South Africa, and the whole artificial intelligence understanding has done very well for those who followed the BizNews portfolios. Well, Donald Trump might be the star attraction, but my goodness, people really want to get in the good books of Elon Musk right now, including Beijing. Here's a report from our partners at Bloomberg about Beijing wanting to sell TikTok America to Elon Musk.
I mean, we're talking about this sort of geopolitical tectonic plates shifting here underway. Now we think about how corporates are being wrapped up into this. It looks like TikTok, perhaps the preferred buyer from Beijing's point of view, will be Elon Musk. Tell us what we know so far.
That's certainly one of the possibilities that's being discussed, and that's what we're hearing from sources. This is a Bloomberg scoop that just came out this morning. I mean, we've got to keep in mind, of course, the main priority from China's perspective is certainly for ByteDance to continue to retain control of the app. But in terms of the possibilities, yes, that's what we're hearing, is that Elon Musk's X could take control of TikTok US and run the two businesses together. What's in it for TikTok, or what's in it for X, rather? I mean, there's a couple of different things. Firstly, it could help X's efforts to attract advertisers. And then separate to that, there's an artificial intelligence company that Elon Musk also founded, XAI, and that could also benefit from the huge amounts of data that's being generated by TikTok. In terms of the valuation of this deal, I mean, again, it's really difficult to tell on a lot of different fronts, but Bloomberg Intelligence last year said that TikTok in the US could be worth somewhere between $40 and $50 billion. Elon Musk is the richest man in the world, we know, but it's still a large amount of money for him to finance, and he's still paying off X's loans as well. It's also unclear if US TikTok would be sold off in a competitive process or if the sale is going to be arranged by the government. But just going back to sort of the main thing we do need to remember, of course, is the priority or the preference for China is for ByteDance to retain control of its operations.
Have we heard from either company?
We haven't heard anything, but it's also, what else is interesting in this scoop today is it's also not clear how much ByteDance actually knows about these conversations that are reportedly taking place, and also whether Musk, TikTok and ByteDance have held any talks themselves on the terms of a possible deal. So there's a lot of different lacks of clarity in this whole story. But one of the things that's also interesting to note is that essentially ByteDance's US operations for TikTok aren't necessarily at the sole control of ByteDance either, because the Chinese government holds a so-called golden share in the ByteDance affiliate in China. That's Douyin. It's the TikTok equivalent in China. ByteDance would say that golden affiliate, that golden share would only apply to Douyin, but of course there are other export controls in place that would prevent China, for instance, or allow China to block the sale of those algorithms that are so precious to TikTok. So ByteDance doesn't really have the full say of where this goes either. So that's, again, according to sources, and it's discussions that are happening at the Chinese government level.
So they really like Elon Musk in Beijing, and not surprisingly, most of the cars that he sells, most of the Teslas that he sells, are actually made in the Chinese factories. Well, let's get on to the markets now, just to give you an update of how the markets traded today. It wasn't the greatest day for South African stocks. Resources down by about 0.5%. Financials were slightly lower. The top 40 index was slightly firmer. Bitcoin, though, had a big rebound. You might recall that yesterday we're sitting at $91,000. There it is, up 2.25% to $96,000. The Rand up 15 cents against the pound and 16 cents against the US dollar, below 19 to the US dollar now, just above 23 to the pound. Biggest moving shares on the JSE. MTN and Vodacom both had a very good day. MTN up 10% and Vodacom up by 4%. Nampak 2.3% higher, but the standout stock is Rennet Investments. I'll tell you a little more about that in a moment. As far as the losers are concerned, Baldwin Properties was down 5%, Attack 3.3%, to Telltale nearly 3%, and WeBuy Cars giving back a little bit of that recent gain. Down 2.7%. Not too many all-time highs. Boxer, the recent listing, is at a new peak for it, R68.27. And Putprop, which I think came out of the old Putco properties, today had a big kicker, up 16% to R3.83. Soho Sun, another new low, down another 2% today, as was ACI, down 0.5%. and to a new low there of 82.24. 91, the asset manager, is plumbing 12-month lows. That's down 0.5%, and Bytes, the UK company that was hived off out of Altron, down by 0.5% today. But the big business story of the moment, Rainet has announced that it will be selling its shares in BAT, British American Tobacco. It owns 2% of the company. This is a historic investment for the Rupert family. It's where Anton Rupert started the whole Rembrandt business. That was then, there was part of it was offshored into what is now Richemont. Richemont then hived off its ownership of BAT into Rainet, and Rainet is now kicking the habit finally from the tobacco company, and it'll be selling its shareholding there, which is about a quarter, 24% to be exact, of its net assets, and it is selling that through a deal to with JP Morgan, which is at about a 4% discount to yesterday's closing price of BAT. 28 billion rand, lots of ammo for Rainet to invest in the South African economy. Its shares were up 6% today. BAT's shares, on a concern of a possible overhang, were down 3%. BAT is a company that's tried to move out of the tobacco area through vaping, etc., but it still does make Lucky Strike. Well, that is the market report for today, and indeed your business brief. And just to remind you that it's 8 o'clock tonight, we have got the premiere of that discussion of the Tuesday show with Rob Hersov and Gerard Papenfuss, having a look at ArcelorMittal's shock decision to close its steel mills in South Africa, or two of the three steel mills, and these exit entirely the long steels business. There's lots of insight, lots of heat, lots of emotion, and lots of anger in that conversation from the two gents, capitalist activists who are completely on fire, from myself and the BizNews team who have put together this program. Until the next time, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.